Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host, Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's Extraordinary Etiquette.
For Ordinary Occasions, hello, my dove.
Hello, dear.
How are you on this rainy April day?
I mean, fine. I think that this might be the real spring. The real one? Because sometimes this happens in Ohio where you have several fake outs before the actual spring happens. Tell
the weather in Ohio.
But you do. You have several very nice, wonderful spring-ish days. You think about like planting flowers and
I don't think about
all that kind of stuff. And like then it gets super cold again. We had like four freezes.
I'll tell you who I feel bad for.
What?
The bulb flowers.
The bulbs.
They start coming out.
Yeah,
like middle of March, and like, they're like, oh, yes, what yeah. the? And then they're so cold.
Like the daffodils that get frozen.
Daffodillos.
Did you know that daffodils are toxic?
Yeah, I mean, I hear them gossiping all the time.
No.
And I'm like, guys, this isn't, come on.
No, I had to convince our children not to pick them for me.
Not to eat them?
Not, well, I mean, I don't think that they would want to eat them, but picking them actually like, when you cut their stems, there's a kind of like toxic sap that's released that can give you tummy troubles.
Oh, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Okay. Also tell them not to pick them because I've worked really hard to grow those.
Well.
Yeah. I've put a lot of work into cultivating our yard and plants and things like that. And I would like our kids not to pick them.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. I kept them
from doing that.
Speaking of... We're coming up on Earth Day.
We are. How
cultivating,
apropos.
Planting. I love planting. My garden technique, by the way, in case anyone was wondering, because I grow vegetables and flowers. I have a very, let nature, as nature will. I overplant. I don't, like, for example, by the end of the season, my tomato plants look like a tiny jungle,
yes.
Right? I have to like root through there to find the tomatoes, and I'm fine with that. Let them go wild. That's what I do. Let nature as it will.
And I'm happy to let you let nature.
Let nature as it
I
will.
I don't do it.
Yeah.
Hey, but here's the thing that I think that I did not know the history of for this Earth Day.
Is it tomatoes?
No.
Okay.
It is leave no trace. And this was suggested.
Like in spying.
Yes. On nature.
That's not so much now with the Daniel Craig James Bonds. Daniel Craig smashes through a wall to find documents.
Oh, he does.
He leaves so many traces,
so much.
You guys.
This was suggested by Katie F. So we're going to talk about the history as well as the criticisms of the program.
Okay.
So that, you know, our listeners out there can have a good starting point on all angles of this conservation effort.
Okay.
Speaking of which, you may wonder, how did KDF suggest it? Well, they emailed Alex, A-L-E-X-X, at schmannerscast@gmail.com. Don't address it to her in...
No, it's schmannerscast@gmail.com. It's not alex at schmannerscast@gmail.com.
No,
that's too many ats.
That's too many ats. Don't do that. But address it to Alex. Yeah. We're always in need of those topic suggestions. So thank you very much, KDF.
Thank you, KDF.
What exactly is leave no trace?
Oh, that wasn't rhetorical.
No, it's for you.
I assume from the title... that it is about traces.
Yep.
You don't leave them.
Mm-hmm.
That your impact on, like when you, okay. I know like when you go out into the woods, you take only pictures and leave only footprints or something like that in memories.
Something like that.
Take memories, leave the cannoli. Something like that. What is that?
No, don't leave the cannoli.
Don't leave the cannoli. Whatever you do. Don't give bears cannoli. We've trained the bears to love cannoli, and now we have bears in all of our pastry shops.
It is a set of ethics promoting conservation of outdoor spaces in the U.S. Because during the post-World War II boom, a population boom, more and more people were finding themselves with leisure time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the working class, especially, didn't used to have. And so that meant that people were taking vacations. We had highways. People were driving places. Here's the thing.
Yes.
They probably wanted to just enjoy themselves. And they didn't really think about their impact on the environment.
Do you mean humans in general?
Humans.
Because do you mean like humans in general forever and ever? Because that I feel like what you've just said, I've watched basically at this point, movie or television show, but basically we just watched Avatar for the Max Fun Drive bonus content that we put up. And what you've just described seems like a pretty good summation of humans.
Not all humans.
Not all humans.
Indigenous people usually have a pretty good grip on how to take care of the things around them.
Yeah, though I do want to blanket that by saying, like, what, like historically, I don't want to make that stereotype of, like, because someone is indigenous, they have naturally this
right.
better connection to the environment.
But those communities have a better track record.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were just kind of ignorant. It's the thing, right? They didn't mean to damage things, but they were ignorant about the damage they could cause to an ecosystem, mm-hmm. right? And in the 60s and 70s, this was an explosion of people into, like, public recreation.
Well, yeah, it's one of the things that I'm interested in, but usually my version of the interest is in amusement parks. Mm. But this idea of car travel becoming so much more universal and long distances and like the driving recreation, especially here in America, where the railway system isn't what it is, like, say, in Europe, right?
It isn't even what it used to be.
And so this idea of things like Disneyland, right, starts popping up.
Mm-hmm.
And then people saying, oh, I want to do that, but airplane travel is still way out of, you know, our price range, right? And feasibility at that point, air travel was a luxury thing akin to, like, taking a cruise. And so what you got was all of these, like, amusement parks popping up on, like, roadsides and stuff like that, right? And the same with the national parks and stuff mm-hmm. like that became destination things that you could drive to, take your kids to, do for a vacation without having to fly.
Yes. The National Park Service saw their attendance increase from 33 million in 1950 to 172 million in 1970.
And that's more.
That is
that's a higher number.
More. And all of these new campers.
I'm no mathematician.
All these new campers had to have gear, including tents and sleeping pads and other equipment that was made out of materials that caused harm to the environment that they were being used in, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the only issue, because several articles during this period talk about the country's natural spaces being, quote, loved to death.
Ooh.
People overcrowding campsites, crushing local flora, causing problems while they tried to track down and, like, watch wildlife.
Not to mention when you get into taking souvenirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's there's a whole issue. I think it was like with the Petrified Forest where they had, I don't think it was just specific to there, but that's the example that pops up into my head where they really had to start drilling into people's heads like, please do not take pieces of the Petrified Forest home with you.
Right.
Or there will be less and less petrified. Like, it's not it's replenishing resource.
It's finite.
If you keep taking rocks and stuff away and petrified wood away, there will be less and less of it every year.
Right. And so there were regulations in place. For example, like group sizes, right? It wasn't that you couldn't have a family reunion of all your family anymore at the park without special permits and things.
Yeah.
It was more like,
or if you only have like three people in your family.
Sure.
It might be a small family and maybe you guys just haven't seen each other all day and you're like, we'll meet back here. And then it's like, what a great and easy reunion.
But these rules that were meant to help everyone get along with nature and enjoy nature had a big pushback at initially. They were inundated with letters from people claiming that the rules took all the joy and spontaneity out of their wilderness adventure.
Uh-huh.
And so what, so the guidelines were great, but what we needed was to educate the public, right?
Yeah, I will also say, listen, I don't want to sound like I'm down on human beings, but Avatar's really gotten me. The thing is,
everything is Avatar these days.
Listen, it really crawled into my heart and planted a flag there. But
the wrong one, the wrong Avatar.
What? Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, baby. Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra are the superior Avatar. That,
yes.
I will not die on that hill because it's just wrong. They are the right one.
They are the right
yeah,
one.
Yeah, those are the right one. But this idea of, well, you put rules on it and now it's not fun anymore.
Exactly.
Is a very human sentiment that you see. Man, there are wonderfully, I don't know, wild. It's so weird. It feels so archaic to watch now. But videos, you can find like news stories and interviews from like the 80s when they outlawed drinking alcohol in your car while driving.
Yep.
And you can see people like, it's just ruining. You know, I get off of work and I've had a hard day, like working in the factory or whatever. I want to be able to drink a beer on my way home. And it's like watching it now, you're like, what are you talking about?
It's like the same people who complain about seatbelts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It's wild. So by 1987, the National Park Service, the United States Forest Service,
4-year-old Travis McElroy,
the Bureau of Land
Baby
Management,
Griffin,
they collaborated to make a pamphlet entitled Leave No Trace Land Ethics.
Okay.
So by 1994, it wasn't just a pamphlet. It was a nonprofit. And the Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics.
I assume they still had pamphlets, though.
I'm sure that
they didn't plant a pamphlet and it grew into a nonprofit. You said that like I thought you were going to say it wasn't just a pamphlet, it was a book. But you're like, the pamphlet somehow became a nonprofit pamphlet?
Don't feed it after midnight.
That's wild. Who's feeding pamphlets at all, baby?
It formed the educational resources they had around 7 original principles of Leave No Trace. And here they are.
Okay.
Plan ahead and prepare.
Okay.
Travel and camp on durable surfaces.
Okay.
Dispose of waste properly.
Okay.
Leave what you find.
Yeah.
Minimize campfire impacts.
Uh-huh.
Respect wildlife.
Yes.
Be considerate to other visitors.
Yes.
And so there's...
That's also the rules when you visit a school.
Yes.
I mean, you shouldn't build campfires in school, but if you do, minimize the impact.
And these 7 principles were kind of like they were expanded and contracted and expanded and contracted over time. And so it may have originally like began with like 75 or so.
That's too many.
But in 1999, those 7 principles were finalized. And here's the thing, right?
Tell me the thing.
It was a highly effective campaign. Maybe too much.
Maybe, I can't wait. I want to hear. Hold
maybe
on.
Too effective.
I want to learn, but first, how about a word from the Max Fun Show?
Are you tired of being picked on for only wanting to talk about your cat at parties?
Do you feel as though your friends don't understand the depth of love you have for your guinea pig?
When you look around a room of people, do you wonder if they know sloths only have to eat one leaf a month?
Have you ever dumped someone for saying they're just not an animal person?
Us too.
She's Alexis B. Preston.
She's Ella McLeod.
And we host Comfort Creatures, the show where you can't talk about your pets too much. Animal trivia is our love language. And dragons are just as real as dinosaurs.
Tune in to Comfort Creatures every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
What is up, people of the world? Do you have an argument that you keep having with your friends and you just can't seem to settle it? And you're sitting there arguing about whether it's Star Trek or Star Wars, or you can't decide what is the best nut, or can't agree on what is the best cheese?
Stop doing that. Listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal, only on Max Fun.
Your topics asked and answered objectively, definitively, for all time.
So don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this.
Okay, how effective?
Okay.
How effective?
There were numerous officials and bulletin boards and pamphlets.
Smokey's the Bear.
Exactly. And articles and every
big... Do kids these days know who Smokey the Bear is?
I think that they
do. We had a conversation. Teresa and I talked about this where because so much entertainment now happens on streaming and stuff that I don't think kids are exposed to like the public, you know, the PSAs and stuff. We had one growing up in Huntington. I don't think this was universal of Louis the Lightning Bug about you got to play it safe around electricity. You got to play it safe around electricity. But you had McGruff. You had Smokey the Bear. You had Louis the Lightning Bug. You got a lot of them.
But a lot of them.
I don't think those pop up for kids anymore, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But everybody was hopping on board this bandwagon. We've got the Sierra Club, the National Outdoor Leadership School, the Boys and Girl Scouts of America. We've got the National Outdoor Leadership School, the United States Forestry Service. All of these nonprofits and other groups really latched onto this. And so it was with the best of intentions that it was dedicated to the responsible enjoyment and active stewardship of outdoors spaces.
Yes.
Right?
Which seems like such a good thing.
It really does. And across the world now, people model their like stewardship kind of programs on the Leave No Trace. We've got there's organizations in Australia and Canada and New Zealand and Ireland. And here's the thing. There are some very valid criticisms of this movement.
Okay.
We can all agree that throwing candy wrappers into the Grand Canyon is some true butthead behavior.
Can I tell you who especially agrees with that? B.B. McElroy.
Yes.
B.B. McElroy gets so angry when she sees litter. I have seen her get angry to tears. And if you're listening to this and you ever even think about littering, I want you to picture my daughter getting angry to the point of tears and then eat your garbage. Do you hear me? Because you even thought about it, you eat your garbage, you goat. You're a goat now because you were even thinking about littering. Your garbage.
So
that's my new movement, my new rule. Only if you even think about littering. If it crosses your mind, eat your garbage. And that's how you're going to learn a new trait, a new habit. Oh, I don't want to even think about littering or I'll have to eat this garbage. Okay.
So there are several criticisms that I think that definitely are valid. For example, in 2002, environmental historian James Morton Turner argued that the scope of responsibility for Leave No Trace isn't actually big enough. We've run into this where, like, there's the kind of fallacy that, like, every person doing it does their part, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you don't hold corporations
yes.
and municipalities accountable, then even every little person doing every little thing they can is not a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Right?
We've also talked about this before, I think, but you run into a lot with stuff like this where maybe what it should have been is like the first big step on a series of big steps to get to a point. But you start doing this thing and then everyone's like, okay, we solved it. That's it. We don't have, as long as we're doing these things.
Right.
We don't. And it's like, no, sorry. That was step one. And it's like, yeah, but I'm already doing these. So I don't want to worry about it anymore, which is always, frankly, one of the things with like recycling that we could talk about another time, but people will be like, no. I can use as much as I want, because I'm putting it in this bin. It's like, no.
So even though Leave No Trace focuses on protecting the wilderness, right, the world is not just wilderness.
Yes.
And so what we need to do is tackle larger issues like the economy and consumerism, like you were saying, and the environment as a whole.
Yes.
Not just these patches of forest, right?
And that's the thing is like, it's one thing, okay, not to get a little preachy for a moment, but when we talk about not, like, littering, right? Mm-hmm. That's a great start of, like, you're driving down the road, don't throw your candy wrapper out the window, right? But then also think about when you get a package or something, right, and there's, like, 18 layers to get to the thing inside, right? It's like, cool, you didn't litter this thing, but let's think about the way we package stuff, the way, and that's not something I could change. It's something we can think about, mindful consumerism, which right. everyone should be thinking about. But that kind of thing is next step. It's like, yes, you didn't throw the package out the window. Now let's work on less packaging, on biodegradable packaging, on packaging that doesn't need to be thrown away, but can be reused and stuff like that.
Exactly. And so
we focus too much on the recycle and not the reduce and reuse part.
That's it. That's it. And also, speaking of the consumerism, right? Outdoor brands like REI and like North Face and all this kind of stuff, they have approved leave no trace labels that they put on their products, which is great for them, but it does encourage people to consume more.
Yes.
Because maybe you already have something, but you see that REI has something that has a leave no trace label. And so the marketing works on you and you purchase something that you don't actually need.
This is the thing, once again, I feel like I'm getting on a little pulpit here, but this is the thing we were talking, I was talking with Justin Griffin yesterday about, have you ever watched, I love watching like restoration videos of like, this is a coffee grinder from 1912, right? And they're like taking it apart and cleaning it and everything. And what you find is the way that they were constructed was to be like, this is the only coffee grinder you'll ever, it didn't have bells and whistles, wasn't fancy, but it was like two moving parts.
Yeah.
And as long as you like maintained it, it just was your coffee grinder forever.
Yeah.
Right? And then we start getting into like, yeah, but then if you're a person who makes coffee grinders, you need more coffee. Don't you need? And that's where it gets into the consumerism of making things that are designed to break down, or trying to convince someone that the next, like, well, this is the new sleeping bag and it's better than the old sleeping bag because ? And it's like, okay, cool. We're just creating more waste mm-hmm. from these things.
There are a couple of reasons for those kind of breakdowns. Not only is it made more cheaply and quickly, but also when things start to introduce like computer components that break a lot easier.
Well, and there's also planned obsolescence.
Yes, yes.
There is the very idea of yeah. like saying like, and we're going to stop updating this one so that you'll buy that one. And listen, now I'm going to step down from my pulpit and step over here into my little shame hypocrite corner. I am the type of person that's like, oh, a new phone, you say, a new video game system. So don't get it twisted. I'm not saying like, and I'm better at this than anyone else. It's just a thing that I've definitely become aware of more and more, and I'm trying to be better about.
There are other critiques of the Leave No Trace movement. Dr. Kiona, who is an incredible academic turned entrepreneur with a focus on education through travel and community, has some notes and has a beautiful article entitled, which I cannot say the whole title here, but you'll get the gist, How Not to Be a Bullying in the Outdoors.
What's the word to start with?
B.
Okay.
So there are some cultural implications of Leave No Trace that lead to unintended consequences. As she puts it, straight up racist harassment under the guise of LNT ethics.
Ooh, no good.
So here are her main takeaways. Indigenous people are not usually the target of this audience. And they don't often, like we said at the beginning, need to be told, leave what you find, right? Alex Petrosky-Begay, a Navajo outdoor guide who gave Dr. Kiona a tour of protected land in Utah, spoke about how the land that they were interacting with had been cared for by the Navajo people for millennia. And then white colonizers came, colonized, and then ironically created rules to preserve the land that was already being lovingly protected by the native people.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of leaving what you find specifically diminishes and invalidates the advanced knowledge and cultures of indigenous practices.
Yeah, it's almost like, hey, why don't you ask the people who have been there how to do it
yeah.
instead of saying like, I think we know.
Yeah.
We've been here for a short blip of time. I think we know.
It's that it begs the question, who are we protecting this land from?
Yeah.
Right?
And for.
Also,
that's the other thing is how you use the land. It's like, yeah. Yes, we're protecting this land. So eventually we can build malls on it or whatever. It's like, wait, no, hold on.
Or like, you know, we have a problem with wildfires in this mm-hmm. country, mostly because we do not control the wildfires that are necessary, well, right?
And
everything, yeah. When you have so much brush and undergrowth, it keeps all of that kind of like dry kindling available for an unintended fire. Whereas if we were able to, like, normally a wildfire would take care of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so you wouldn't have all of that stuff building up and building up and building up. So that's the problem with keeping wildfires away, is you need the wildfires, and it also returns a lot of nutrients to the soil, making things better for the other things that are growing there. And, you know, I understand the effort to protect wildlife and homes, but at what cost?
Well, and that second part, homes, is part of the problem.
Yeah.
Of like,
maybe we shouldn't build homes here.
This is, and here's the thing, right? It makes complete sense, because when you find someplace that's beautiful, the desire to be there makes complete sense,
mm-hmm.
right? This is a beautiful place. I would like to live in a beautiful place. That makes complete sense, and I get that. But I've heard from people who work in like wildfire services, right? That one of the reasons nowadays wildfires can seem so scary is because, not because the wildfire encroaches into where people have been living, but as people encroach into
where the wildfires
happen, now you're doing things like disrupting where a natural break in the wildfire would happen because you built a thing there, right? When you've added houses there. And so now it's like, well, yeah, people are in danger a lot more from wildfires now, because there are a lot more people where wildfires happen than where they used to be. You know, that
kind
of thing.
Which is why I'm a fan of controlled burns and staying out of the wilderness.
Yes.
Okay.
That Smokey never said that. Smokey should have been like, and also, you can prevent forest fires. And maybe also, don't live here. Like, yes. I'm a bear. This is where I live. Can I come? Give me a house. Do you want to trade? You can come live in a cave.
Okay. The next thing is the Leave No Trace gives quiet ammunition to white supremacy.
Oh, no.
Dr. Kiona spoke with Rebecca Macaro, a member of the, please excuse my pronunciation, Pamukkatchakum Nation in California, who says that she specifically was harassed while on an educational culture trip to pick poppies and chia and other plants that have been ancestral foods for her community for generations. And during one of her approved trips, she was harassed by a passing white man who was yelling at her about the leave no trace, leave what you find kind of ideas, right? And so although we want people to be empowered to protect the wilderness, you never know what someone is doing, right? And it is not your job to police other people.
That's, just so you know, that's a good umbrella rule, not just for Leave No Trace, but a lot of things you see nowadays are because somebody takes it upon themselves to be the rule keeper of an area or store or neighborhood or something like that. And it's, don't do that. Hey, don't do that.
So I think that although it has some really great points, we want to make sure that we are not making sure that other people do it correctly.
Yes.
Right? Because you, first of all, never know what kind of permits they already have.
Yes,
and
correct.
They might find enjoyment in different ways than you do. Right? For example, one of the tenants that we talked about was be considerate of other people around you, right, in the wild, enjoying their own thing. And maybe for you, consideration means quiet contemplation,
yes.
Right? But maybe for someone else, it means joyful laughter or singing.
Yes.
It means
a drum circle.
A drum circle, sure. Lots of different things it could mean. And it is, like we said, not anyone else's job to tell them what they're doing is wrong. Just like you wouldn't want someone to come up to you and say, you are being too quiet and still. Stop it.
Yeah.
Right?
You're creeping me out.
So, what do we do?
Be cool.
Sure. Here are some ways to ethically practice. Leave no trace.
Okay.
Plan ahead and prepare. That's one of the first
ones. That's a great one. Yes.
Right? Look up the place you're going to visit. Are there any special concerns or regulations? What are the animals like? Should you refrain from making a fire because of the dry season? Check out their website. Okay? Make a plan.
Also, are there approved places to stay?
Yes.
Because I don't know if y'all know this. You can't just go and be like, I'm camping here now, most places. At least in when you're talking about like national and state forests and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Have a backup plan for extreme weather. Figure out when might be the busiest time and try to avoid the busiest times. On that note, try to use the smallest group possible, okay? Because the more people who are in your party, the more impact you're going to make on this space that you probably don't actually like live in, right? Repackage your food as best you can to minimize waste.
And to keep it from bears.
Mm-hmm. Look into a bear-proof bag if you think that if bears are one of the animals that you might encounter or might be in the general area that you're in. And when exploring, use a map, a compass, or a GPS. That way, you can cut down on marking paints and like rock cairns or flagging the trails for yourself. And also, if something else is there, just leave it. Leave it alone. I know that there are different reports of people making like rock cairns in rivers and stuff like that. And, you know, there have been different campaigns to like, if you see one of these, push it down. It doesn't mean anything. It's just destroying the habitat for the fish, like all that kind of stuff. Right. But don't just leave it. Don't make any more. Just leave it. Because, again, that's not your job. The people who are, you know, like the rangers of the area, they can go. They can push those down. But just leave
it. You can pick up trash, though.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Your trash and any other trash you find. Second one, travel and camp on durable surfaces. The best campsites are found, not made. And the best campsites are set out ahead of time for you to be there because that's what they're made for. Keep your campsite small. And if you're camping by a lake or a stream, be back at least 200 feet so you don't disturb the bank of the river or the stream.
Yeah, so you don't roll into the stream while you're sleeping.
Sure. Stick to the trails and walk single file in the middle of the trail so that you don't disturb the flora, the fauna on either side. And if you have to go off the trail to relieve yourself, you don't want to like do that in the middle of the trail. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do your business real quick. That doesn't violate leave no trace because even a bear poops in the woods, right?
They do. Okay. I've been wondering that and no one's ever answered it for me.
But you do have to dispose of it properly. If you cannot get to a facility, you need to dig a hole that is at least 6 to 8 inches deep and again, 200 feet from water, camps, or trails and then cover the hole when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
That's for solid waste. Remember to pack it in and pack it out. Inspect your campsite, food prep areas, rest areas, any other places you used before you move on. Packing out all of your trash and leftover food and any of that other stuff. If you're washing dishes, which is something that we used to do at the Girl Scout camps that I would go to, make sure that you are, again, 200 feet from lakes or streams and use a very small amount of biodegradable soap and don't throw it back in the river. Drain and scatter your dishwater when you're done using it. Okay? All right. Leave what you find means, like you said, take pictures, not pedals. Photographs and stuff are perfect.
No souvenirs, just memories and pictures.
That's it. And
buy souvenirs in a gift shop.
Like I said, don't build structures or furniture or dig trenches on in any of that stuff. Don't do any of that stuff. But again, it is not your business what other people are doing. Assume kind intent and proper permits. When you see someone harvesting something, interacting with something in a way you wouldn't, use your judgment. A lady with a group of kids respectfully harvesting chia seeds is way different from a group of dumb teenagers throwing trash at trees.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Minimize the impact of your campfire means lighting fires in permitted places like established fire rings, pans, and mounds, keeping them small, making sure that all the wood and coals are burned to ash, and scattering and raking them when you're finished.
Don't just dump water on it.
Yes.
Because especially like big logs and stuff, you don't know if it's all the way out. Those things can steam and reignite for a while. Sand and dirt is a much better way to ensure that it is completely out. Smother it is way better.
And check safety advisories. You may not even be allowed to make a campfire at that yep. point. Respect the wildlife. Enjoy and observe from a distance. Do not feed anything.
Yep.
We talked about storing food securely, controlling pets, or leave them at home. Ask the ranger at your park if there are any sensitive wildlife times. For example, is it a mating season? Is it a nesting season?
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff is very important. It makes your visit better, and it makes the wildlife there better. Be considerate of other visitors. Like we said, this is the one that is brought up the most, but also the most forgotten, right?
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't harass people.
Yeah. Just in general.
Just in general. So being considerate means acting in a considerate way in the same way that you would want to be treated, right?
Yes.
So there are very, very, very few situations where you would ever need to approach another camper or hiker or wildlife enjoyer to voice your opinion. It is not your job. Ask yourself several questions before you even do. Questions like, why am I interacting with this person? Do I see something that could actively hurt them right now or I'd like to protect them from? Or am I just sharing my opinion, an extension of me policing a person's experience?
So that I feel superior to them.
Exactly. You are not a ranger. So if you feel that you still need to say something, don't. And go get someone who's in charge. Okay? Great. Step downhill of the trail when you're encountering a pack stock. That's like a donkey carrying things, right? And then do your best to personally avoid loud noises so that other people can enjoy themselves, right? But if someone, like I said, if someone is being loud, singing or expressing joy, that's beautiful too. Consider that instead of chastising that person, walk somewhere else quieter.
And yeah? Consider this. We want to say thank you to our editor, Rachel, without whom we could not make this show. Thank you to our researcher, Alex, without whom we could not make this show. And thank you for listening. We could make a show without you, but that would just be silly. I also want to say thank you to my wife, Teresa. She is my rock. She is the rock. And we want to let you know a couple things. One, we just announced a bunch of My Brother, Me, and Adventure Zone tours. If you go to themacroy.family, you will find all the information there. But we've got upcoming shows in at the end of April here in Chicago. The My Brother, and Me on April 24th is sold out, but we still have a few tickets for the April 25th Adventure Zone. And then we're going to be at C2E2. You can find all that information and all the new tours by also going to bit.ly/MacroyTours. We've got a bunch of merch. If you haven't seen it yet, go to macroymerch.com. What else, Teresa?
We always thank Brent, Brentofloss Black, for writing our theme music, which is available as a ringtone where those are found. Also, thank you to Bruja Betty Pinnup Photography for the cover picture of our fan-run Facebook group, Schmanners Fanners. If you love to give and get excellent advice from other fans, go ahead and join that group today. Always send your topic submissions, your questions, your idioms to schmannerscast@gmail.com. And if you are interested in this topic some more, please check out the Instagram community of Unlikely Hikers. Also, Dr. Kiona's website is great. And you can check out the Urban Wilderness Program for another great resource. Bringing everyone together to enjoy the wilderness.
And that's going to do it. Join us again next week.
No RSVP required.
You've been listening to Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Mac. Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported directly
by you.